Welcome to the I Am Jane Wilson, the Healing Rebel podcast. And I have another guest with me this week. I have Tina, who I met through a fitness business networking group that I'm in. And I was reaching out asking for people who could share journeys that they've been on to help do things to improve their health, whether they've already been given a diagnosis or whether they're looking to help prevent diagnoses. So, Tina, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, tell people who you are, what you do, where you're based, and we'll take it from there.
So I'm Tina and I'm based in North London in an area called Whetstone, which is in the London Borough of Barnet. So it's North London. I'm about a 5 minute drive from Hertfordshire, so just right up at the border, nearly the outskirts of London. I run LHM Health and Fitness, which is just a tiny micro business that I've set up of community classes, personal training. I have some virtual classes as well that I offer, and I work one-to-one with quite a few different people. And I also can work within businesses and organizations to help the people within those businesses think about their health and well-being and movement as a as an overall thing, and make a few tangible changes sort of there and then from that day onwards, which aren't too onerous, but to help improve their lives.
Yeah, it's amazing how such small steps that people can take that can make such massive differences in their health that you think, why is this not being taught at primary school? Like, why is this not just being ingrained in society? Why are these messages not coming out from the NHS, from the government? So what would you say is the most common question you get asked when you're doing these kind of community events, workshops, classes?
Within a more like a corporate presentation that I do, it's always about things like is honey okay? I mean, I tend to focus on sugar reduction as one of the main priorities when I'm talking about nutrition. So the main question I get asked is probably, what about honey? You know, or syrup. Syrup's okay, you know, isn't it? That sort of question. But and then the shock on people's faces when you kind of say, well, it actually raises your blood sugars as much as sugar does. And then I always kind of go, sorry, but that's the fact. And then within a fitness class, it tends to be fitness related. With personal training, it is very, very different because everyone that I work with is completely different and is with me for a very different reason. And there's some people within personal training, they don't want to hear about the nutrition side of things. Others are there for the nutrition side of things, plus well-being and sort of time management and what can I do during the week when I'm not with you, that sort of thing. But there's some people that are there because they know that I specialize in sugar reduction, if you like. But there's others who are there because let's exercise and my nutrition is my nutrition and I'll do it in my way.
Yeah, for some people, I think it can be small steps. Once they get into the fitness part and then realize that they're not maybe getting the results they want, then they have to come to that realization that nutrition will be the next step for them, whereas other people start with a nutrition and then go to fitness. It's everybody's journey is going to be slightly different with that.
Yes, and I've worked with doctors or retired doctors, dentists, you know, and they, you know, when especially when someone is retired, you know, they've been doing something a particular way for long enough, then they don't want to change anything, and it's generally, you know, your average healthy diet, so it's not too bad. So there's always, I'm sure everyone could always make positive changes, and I still could too. Nobody's perfect, but sometimes people aren't ready to hear a message, and if they're not ready, then I'm not going to force that down anyone's throat by any means.
Yeah. So what got you into reducing sugar?
So I actually had it in my mind that I was going to be sugar free for 10 years this October, but as I've just done, it's been so long now because it is 10 years. I just did the research back to an old blog that I used to write. about 7 or 8 years ago, and actually it's 9 years, so I'm just 1 year off that decade thing. I had been advertising it, but it's fine. I don't think anyone's going to mind. A long time ago, I just wasn't well. In fact, actually, my whole adult life, I wasn't well from about the age of 14, 15 up until early 30s when I started this. I was never really very well. I wasn't ill as such, but I was never really very well. So, and it took me a long time to, number one, identify, and then number two, come to terms with the fact that I was addicted to sugar, and only through certain research, and as the internet got better, if you like, and had more information on it. There weren't many people at that time that were talking about sugar reduction, or becoming sugar free, or quit sugar. And that's about 10 years ago. There were two or three, a handful of people that spoke about it. And I deliberated whether that was the issue. And I just thought to myself, I can't possibly be, because it's just a harmless treat. But then I did, after a process of elimination of a few different types of foods and that sort of thing. I then, well, I actually then realized on a particular day that I was addicted to sugar and that I should give it a go. And I remember when that day was, because a friend and I went to go and see a singer, Paolo Nutini, at the Royal Albert Hall for the Teenage Cancer Trust. So I remember it really clearly. Teenage Cancer Trust concerts tend to happen in the springtime. So it was the spring of that year. I'd eaten my evening meal. I'd eaten a dessert. But I grabbed a couple of chocolates from the cupboards to take down there for her and I to both share. And I gave her one, and I ate my one, and I said, "I'm addicted to this, aren't I?" And it was that night, and that was probably like in May of that year. So May of 2014. And then I didn't actually give it a go to try and give up sugar until the October of that year, because I didn't want to.
Yeah, it's like you the seed was planted, but it takes time to germinate and then blossom, doesn't it?
Yes.
I know I need to do this thing, but the divine timing happens, and then you will get there in the end. So when you say that you have removed sugar from your diet, and you said they were one of the questions you always get asked, is what about honey? What about syrup? What types of sugar were you mostly reaching for, and what does your diet look like now that you've taken sugar out?
That's a great question, and in fact, my diet has sort of evolved since then as well. So it's now I don't eat sugar, and I don't eat any grains, and I don't eat any seed oils either. So none of those things. So I can definitely give you an outline of what my diet looks like then. But that process, that journey took, I thought, 10 years is 9 years. Well, in fact, I went seed oil free in 2021, and it's 23 now, isn't it? So that's 2 years ago. So it's around eight years it took me to get from one end to the other. So October 2013, I tried giving up sugar for a little bit, a few days. And then I thought all I had was cravings during that time. So I thought, well, I can't feel the benefit of this. I'll just have a bit of chocolate. And then I did. And then I immediately got a headache, like a pounding headache. So that just showed me that, whilst I couldn't feel benefit from giving up the sugar at that time, I could definitely feel some detrimental effect on my health when I did have a little bit of it. I didn't just go sugar free, because I found it very hard to do that. I just gradually cut out everything that constituted sugar. So biscuits, cakes, sweets. I used to have all of it, juice, apple juice, just all of the honeys and everything. About a year later, after more research, I then also realized that, a low carb diet is also reducing more sugar. So your breads, potatoes, rice, and pasta, I cut that down to half the amount and just continued to reduce that, and lived that way fairly happily for many years. I previous to that had had a lot of ailments, migraines about four times a year. Very regular headaches, psoriasis, itchy skin. I used to have flakes of skin coming out of my scalp, and I'd go and buy your dandruff shampoos to try and treat it. Itchy skin, sugar cravings, no motivation, sort of tiredness in the afternoon. If it was a day off, I'd always have a nap in the afternoon, having spent, 10 hours in bed or 12 hours in bed pre-children. Anyway, IBS, running to the loo all the time, just crazy. So I used to just eat biscuits and whatever after having my two children. So by the time I started this, I had two children. One was about 2 or 3, and the other a little bit older. And I started to all of that kind of, all those things started to heal. They started to get better. It wasn't perfect, but it was much better. And I lived many years in this sort of low carb state. And then during lockdown, lockdown came along. So I don't know about what you found, but I had like a regression of, I didn't go back to how I used to eat because I just couldn't, it really made me ill. But I was be having a lot more crisps and a lot more glasses of wine, regular glasses of wine, or in fact my daily glass of wine. And then I found some low carb, I can't remember what they were called, brownie bites or something. So I remember ordering a massive sort of multi-pack off of the internet, and had some of that every day. So I was basically going back to my old habits of, well, my favorite thing in the olden days was a packet of crisps and, a Twirl or a Twix or something like that. And then when it got into lockdown, I just hit those habits in a slightly different way. I was having savory food, but still, not great for you, with crisps daily, and these sort of lower carb options of chocolate, essentially, or cake. And then wine, and I thought, was it called? Is it called carb creep when things, when the carbs come, start to creep back into your life? So I started revisiting old habits. In about September of 2020, I was really suffering. I had atrocious pain in my body. My joints were really painful, my knees, my ankles. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Great. my knees, my ankles, were my hips were really, really painful. So and after some more research, I then eliminated grains from my diet. So grains is like all wheat. So no pasta at all, no bread at all, not even flatbreads, no wraps, which I had been eating before here and there, not loads. Pita bread, all of that kind of thing. Eliminated all of that, and I was eating actually rye bread and spelt and all of these other kinds of grains. But I realized I just couldn't have that either, so I removed all of that, which was of a massive help. It really re helped with a lot of things, especially the pain. The pain didn't quite go away. I would then was then for the next year or so getting very random pain in my body, whereby I'd be lying in bed and all of a sudden I'd get a shooting pain just down my forearm or just down my shin or something. And I'd be lying there thinking, what on earth is this? Where's it come from? And then all of a sudden it would disappear. Or pains down into my, through my wrist and right into all of my, the bones of my fingers. Same with my feet. And then again, it's with some research and, sort of moving in the right circles, if you like. I heard about seed oils and the effects that seed oils do have on your body as well. And after eliminating that, the majority of that pain has now gone. So I suspect I would have been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, maybe even, oh, what's it called? Is it Crohn's disease? Is it Crohn's that affects your digestion? So I suspect that I might have been diagnosed with one of those had I not changed my diet, but I have. So, I guess I've treated myself. In my, in my own way, just through diet, which is really good.
Oh, it's Rosie here, not sure.
I lost you again?
I'm back.
Excellent. Excellent. I did keep talking.
Yeah, so the last I heard you talking about was about you removing the seed oils.
Yes, so I removed seed oils about a year after going grain free, and that did help to remove the majority of the aches and pains that I was having. And weirdly, since then, I have healed things like random things that I didn't know you could heal, such as hay fever, tinnitus, sensitive teeth. So things I just forgot that I had always suffered with tinnitus. I always had noise in my ears. When I'd go to bed, it was the worst time because everything was silent, or as silent as you can get in North London. But and I could just hear it, and it would just go louder and louder and louder. And then not that long ago, about a year or 18 months ago, I bumped into a friend who also had it. And she said, oh, she mentioned something and said, that wouldn't help our tinnitus, would it? And I said to her, oh, it's gone. I just don't have it anymore. And I can only really put that down to diet, because what I have not changed anything else. I haven't done anything different to my ears. So I'm guessing that it's that, sensitive teeth. Again, I could never bite into any ice cream or anything like that. Don't even eat ice cream now, but I always really suffered with just with a cold drink, and that's all gone.
That's amazing. Because I know I watched there was a PhD kind of review of the work that had been done, and it was the one of the Crohn's and colitis charities that had this review, and it was about dietary fats for people with IBD, and they had done a review of all the different types of fats, and all the seed oils came out saying that they caused inflammation in the gut. Now they could only say it causes inflammation in the gut for people with IBD because that was the only people that they had been studying. But yes, we've got more sen we have got sensitive guts, but that just means that the people who they haven't looked at, they would be experiencing things that nobody's connecting back to these seed oils. And if you look at just about every single piece of food that comes in a packet in the supermarket has got rapeseed oil, sunflower seed oil. Like, you can't get away from it. And well, you can get away from it. You just don't eat those foods. You make everything from scratch, to be able to get away from it. But it was really, really interesting. So I'm like you, that the seed has been planted, that I know I need to get away from seed oils, and like I've moved away. I used to drink like non-dairy milks. All of them have got seed oils in them,
Yeah, they
and
do. They're not the healthier option.
they're not any better for the planet either, because they come in like heavily like plastic coated cardboard boxes, and they've got a whole bunch of shit chemicals in them.
Yes. That's right. That's right.
That's better for the environment. So I've actually gone back to dairy milk, and my gut has been better since I've gone back to dairy. And I think everybody's different. So for yourself, I think most people, if not all people, could definitely do with reducing highly processed sugars from their diet. Ultra processed foods from their diet should be eliminated. But
Absolutely.
we shouldn't even sell it because it's not real foods.
No.
We need to get back to things being, if it grew on the land or eats from the land, that's what we consume. Get back to nature, get back to that nourishing. So do you have any fruit at all?
Yes, and it's so interesting actually, because I do run some sort of WhatsApp groups, a free one, and then I have a paid one, which is sort of a coaching one, and it's sort of a general all-round coaching. Health, nutrition, fitness, well-being, all of that kind of thing. And the focus this month is sugar and alcohol reduction. And I had that question the other day, on the weekend. Somebody asked me, what about fruit for breakfast? I'm confused. What about fruit for breakfast? I said, so you're going to have to give me a few days to get back to you, because it's not clear cut really with fruit. So what I said to her was, should you have fruit for breakfast, there's probably better options to have, but there's also worse options to have. I said to her, if you're going to have, I always encourage the first meal of anyone's day, and I don't tend to eat breakfast. There's a few days of the month that I do, but I tend to fast and then just have my first meal around lunchtime. And that's always protein rich. I said to her, provided your first meal of the day is rich in protein, if you then also have some fruit with it, it would be okay. So it's not, you're not focusing on the fruit, but also which fruit it is. Obviously, up until now, we've been blessed with berries, and berries have been brilliant, but they're coming out of season, and I don't want berries from across the world now. So now we've got apples and pears. The best thing for me, I think, at the moment is, yes, I do have fruit, and it's conference pears right now. So currently I'm eating conference pears. I love it when they're fresh off the tree and they're crunchy. They're quite low GI, So the answer to should you have fruit? Do I have fruit? Yes, I do. I don't have much every day, but yes, I pretty much have some every day. I don't make a smoothie, and I definitely don't have a juice, but
Yeah.
I do have some fruit every day. And in terms of answering that lady's question, yes, you can have fruit for breakfast if you want to, paired with protein. So if you had it with plain Greek yogurt, and had some fruit in it with some nuts, then that is much better than making a smoothie or having a fruit salad for breakfast as your first thing that you're eating during the day. I don't tend to deviate too much off of the fruits that I do eat. In the summer, when there's things like apricots around and watermelon, then I'll have some of that too because I really love it. And I'm not going to deny myself some of that. I just don't eat loads of it. And I do, I tend to focus on berries in the summer and then apples and pears in the winter. I'm really boring. I just stick to those because I'm quite happy to have a steak, you know, and that steak is makes me happy with some butter on it and some cheese and eggs and that sort of thing. So fruit is just a bonus.
Yeah, but I think if you're eating the stuff that's seasonal and local, then that can really help you go on these kind of convenience. Like when you go into the supermarket, you can get strawberries all year round. Strawberries are shit if you buy them in the winter
Yes.
because they've been sprayed with chemicals and transported across the world, and you can't beat strawberries from your local area. If you're lucky to be able to grow some of your own, even better. And the same with the fruit, if it the apples and pears, like that, they're just coming into season just now. So if we go back to how we used to eat, we only ate food that was available within maybe a 50-mile radius that you could get access to. And we've just been introduced to all these other fruits and vegetables from around the world, which some of them are delicious. But if you're talking about reducing environmental impact and doing what's right for your body knows how to digest the food that you're ancestrally brought up around. I was listening to an audiobook, and it was the Hunter-Gatherer's Survival Guide to the 21st Century, and one of the chapters in that was about eating, and they said, like, if you've done a DNA test, but knowing where and like where historically your DNA is from geographically, then looking at what did those people eat. That was one of the reasons I started eating fish. I had been like vegetarian slash vegan for 20 odd years. And they said this, but it was the seed got planted, and then it took me another 6 months, 8 months to try and introduce fish. And now I'm eating fish 4 and 5 times a week because I'm like, oh, I like this. And then my body's craving it. It's telling me that I want fish, that my body needs it. And when I introduced it, my energy levels went right up.
Yes.
There's something in this.
That's right. I'm so ancestrally I'm from Cyprus, so my parents are from Cyprus. So eating olives and having olive oil and vegetables and like you say fish and grilled meat is just it just comes naturally to me. So it's that Mediterranean diet. And I can digest that perfectly. I can't. I've also actually what I've realized in more recent years as well is as well as not being able to digest those grains and then being inflammatory, I can't actually digest many pulses either. So I can't. Lentils and beans are really, really difficult for me unless it's the red split lentils because they're ready cooked and split before we even cook them. So they just pulverize down to nothing. So I even need to keep away from all of that. Otherwise, it really affects my stomach, and I do look about 4 or 5 months pregnant after I eat just a spoonful of it. So I try to avoid it as much as possible.
Yeah, your body really is very intelligent at telling us what works for it and what doesn't. Because I know a lot of people who say that they can't eat, like, have problems with lentils and chickpeas and stuff, and they have really bad wind from it. But I eat them and digest them, no bother. Like, don't seem to be irritants for me. But things like spinach and kale are really bad. Like, I look like I'm 6 months pregnant if I eat spinach or kale or broccoli. And I'm just like, this is weird.
Yeah, so everyone's different because I'm okay with those, provided they're cooked. You know, I think if they were sort of on the raw end of or completely raw, I would just avoid them. But if they're cooked and wilted, then I'm not then okay with them as well. So yeah, so that's all good. So you did ask me what it is that I do eat.
Yes.
And the answer is yeah, that was a long time ago now. The answer is meat, fish, eggs. Full fat yogurt, plain, of course, not flavored. Some fruits, as I've mentioned, vegetables, and I tend to shy away from, I'll have some potato because it doesn't inflame me, but it is a carbohydrate at the end of the day. I tend to choose things like instead, which I now think they're just delicious, Swede and celeriac are two great options which are lower in carbohydrate, sweet potatoes here and there, and all the vegetables really. If I was to sort of avoid anything, it would be sweet corn because it is really high in carbs again. But again, it's not that I stop having it, I just don't eat loads of it. And then in terms of, I have things like nuts and peanut butter. There are peanut butters that you can get which are own brand ones from the supermarket, which is just nuts. All you need to do is buy it and give it a really, really good stir. And it tastes like nuts. It doesn't have any additional seed oil or anything. They may have some salt in, I can't remember, but I think it might be 100% peanuts. So, and they're not particularly expensive. You just need to have a look at the jar. So there's no nasty oils in that. In terms of condiments, I buy a few. I buy a mayonnaise from an organization that I like. It's quite expensive, but I'd like their. They've got an avocado oil or olive oil mayonnaise, which is quite nice because, of course, mayonnaise is really high in. It's made of oil essentially. Everyone thinks it's eggs, but it's mainly oil. Have I covered everything that I eat? That's probably. It sounds really boring, but it's not. It's really delicious. So, you can't beat a nice salad with some grilled, I don't know, chicken. So you can't beat that, or it's a nice bit of fish or whatever. So, and I'd so I tend to eat. Because my meals are so highly nutritious, I don't even eat that much, and I'm not on a diet or anything like that because, it's filled with butter and fats, but and cheeses. So I do, yes, and I eat cheese as well. But I tend to have for lunch, I'll make pretty hefty omelets, and it's got many different fillings in it, like I don't know, peas or bacon. Or and onions, and I'll just chuck whatever I can find in the fridge into it and make that. And then mid-afternoon, I'll probably have Greek yogurt with fruit and nuts or something like that. And then in the evening, I'll have the evening meal, which might be a salad and some grilled protein. So that's it, three meals. In fact, it's two meals and a snack. And with teach, so I now teach quite a few classes a week. I teach my seven of my own classes and another three or four for other organizations as well. So I'm fairly active.
Yeah. I think it's really important to sort of highlight that your meals are nutritionally dense,
Yeah.
and that's why your body can then thrive on that and be able to do all the activities. If somebody's living on a diet that is more ultra processed or more processed foods, they're not getting the same level of nutrients there. So you're not getting all your vitamins and minerals, as well as the fats, proteins, and essential carbohydrates that you need to eat. And I used to try to explain to my clients that it was like there was the people inside had a wee checklist, and they're like, yep, we've got enough of that, we've got enough of that, we've got enough of that. And if you're eating crisps and chocolate or packet noodles or whatever, a lot of those nutrients are not getting ticked off. So your body's then still hungry, it's still craving because it still needs all these things. And then you end up eating 10 times more just trying to get those nutrients. But then if your body's not got them, it's still not satisfied. So it's like there's a checklist not being ticked off here. Whereas if you're going for the whole foods, more Mediterranean style diet, then all those wee checks are going into the boxes and it's like, yes, we are good. Celebration.
Exactly.
You can have the energy.
Exactly that. Yeah, I used to have, so I would sometimes I would do this. I would have a pack of crisps and chocolate, and then it would be sort of headed to the evening, and then I would head down to the local mini supermarket. I don't want to say their name because they don't need any extra advertising, and I would get one of those family packs of puffy rubbish crisps and eat the whole thing. Me, just me.
And then you're still hungry later.
Yeah, and I would continue, yeah, and then and still go and get more chocolate and biscuits and things to have in between. So yeah, I'm like a different person for sure than I was 10 years ago. I was, I don't know, tired and wired, if you like, and stressed. And now, okay, I'm 10 years older, but also, it's not. It definitely the having a decent diet. Definitely, definitely helps. with everything. It's not just a physical thing.
Yeah. Do you 2 weeks ago I had a girl on talking about periods, and we were talking about like health complications with periods. Did you notice any improvement in your cycle when you changed your diet?
Yeah, my cycle was always okay, but in terms of pain and the ability to function, on the painful days, it's got so much better. Even though I'm 44 now, so perimenopause is definitely there and doing all the things that it does, but still, every single month things are a lot better than they were 10 years ago. There are some months where I won't even notice that I'm due my period, and I'll just get it and think, oh, is that where we are already? And I'll check my calendar, and yeah, we're there because I've had zero symptoms, really, like truly zero. Other times that I still have some pain and everything that goes along with it, but it's just a lot milder than it used to be. So, without a doubt, the change in diet has made a massive difference to that.
Yeah, it influences so much in our bodies that, and because doctors are not taught at medical school anything about nutrition, then they don't know to talk to patients about it. They don't understand how important it is. So I don't know what training that you did. I did my degree was in ex sport and exercise science. So for the full 3 years of the degree, every single term we had a double mod period of module in nutrition. And that was for the full 3 years. We never didn't not have nutrition on the course. So when I first went to see my consultant gastroenterologist, and he said to me that my diet wouldn't have any impact on the symptoms of Crohn's, I was like, what? I was like, get me out of this office. This man doesn't know what he's talking about. What the
That's really weird.
Yeah. And I was just like, huh. But at the time, I was too unwell to, and I lacked confidence in being able to be like, I'm sorry, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I was really taken aback. I'm like, how can they seriously think that nutrition doesn't have anything to do with gut health? And at the time, I did have what we would class as a healthy diet. But I was always eating on the run. I was always eating on the go because I was going from one class to the other, and I would always have like my yogurt with some berries in it, with my oats in it, with some nuts and seeds. So I was never sitting down and digesting food properly. Everything was always done on the run. And then in between that, there would maybe be a packet of crisps or something if I got caught short and was like, oh, I'm really starving. But I was just like, how can this man be sitting there saying this to me? Like, what is happening in this alternate universe? And it's
That is strange.
Only now, 6 years on, that when I had my appointment with him, and I think it was January or February this year, and he was like, oh, when we used to go to our conferences, there would maybe be a 20-minute talk on gut microbiome, and now there's much more focus on it. And I'm like, I'm way ahead of you. It's all right. I'm eating my fermented foods. I'm eating like my high fiber diet. I'm already steps and steps ahead of you here.
That's right, and also I've worked with people. If we just think about type 2 diabetes, I've worked with people and haven't even worked with them in a one-to-one way, who have taken on some of the things that I might have said in a class or in one of my weekly emails or posted online. They've taken that information, they've run with it, and they've gone from being diagnosed as type 2 diabetic to going into remission off of the back of that. And they attribute that to me. It was them really that did it, but they've literally gone into remission because they've taken a few of the bits of advice, such as cut out bread, reduce the amount of potatoes you eat, don't eat any pasta, and don't eat or drink sweet things. And they've just done those things, that's it, and have gone into remission. Most recently, my mum admitted to me after a few years of being type 2 diabetic that she was type 2 diabetic and on tablets for her. And I said, Mum, this is an atrocious embarrassment. I literally work with people to get them to not, you know, to put their type two into remission. Then after a few discussions, you know, slightly heated, she then agreed that she would give it a go. And within after the first 3 months, I went with her to an appointment, and they said, "Oh, there's been no change, which is brilliant. We can ha let's halve your tablets." And then after the next 3 months, they said, "No, your blood sugars are fine," and she's come off of her medication for that, you know. And other people as well. Sometimes, again, people that used to come to my fitness classes pre-pandemic, sometimes that I'll just get a message out of the blue saying, "I still read your emails. I've done this, this, and this. And now I feel so much better, and I've got more energy, and I've lost weight around the middle, and I have barely made any changes. And you know, when I find time and I can exercise, then that's even going to help even more." So there's now like a real group of people who are changing some things, not everything. Some things, nothing. No one's gone as drastic as I have. They've not needed to. But they've changed some things, and it's made a massive positive had a massive positive effect on their lives, you know. And I do advocate all of those. It's habit change. That's all I work on. Sometimes people say, "But can you give me a meal plan?" And I can't give a meal plan. It's just to eat eggs, eat protein, you know, and eat vegetables and stop eating the sweet things. I want you to learn it. I want you to learn it, because that is so much better than me writing you something and then just handing it over to you, and then you doing it for a few weeks and then getting bored of that because it's just got one variation of things on there. And then you're bored of it, and then you're, because that's your diet, you know, you're on a diet. That's not how I work. It's probably worse for me in terms of business. But I want people to learn it and understand it and implement it step by step. But it's not all or nothing. You just do it step by step. A couple of changes this week, get used to that. A couple of changes next week, get used to that, and then just add them up. So stack those positive habits, and then before you know it, by the end of the year, you've made some decent changes, and your body is showing you those results. You don't need those results in 4, 6, or 8 weeks. You need them in 12 months, and 24 months, and 48 months. So that's what we're looking at.
Yeah, it's a bit like it's empowering people to take control of their lifestyle. But we are, I think the fitness industry, a lot of us are really good at teaching that, but it can be, I don't know how you find it, but I definitely find it can be a struggle because we are not classed as the NHS, we are not the health professionals the way a doctor is. And if a doctor's not telling somebody to do it, then oh, well, I don't know, I don't know. And it's like,
If you're so, this is it. The doctors will say, or the general thing will be, "Oh, have a balanced diet." And then we all know the Eat Well plate is not great, and who it's been funded by. I'm pretty sure you know that who it's been funded by, and therefore it needs to be taken with a pinch of salt. But you know, when a doctor says to you, "Oh, everything in moderation," but you're addicted to chocolate and biscuits, so then you have chocolate and biscuits in moderation, but because you're addicted to it, it just causes more cravings, so you eat more of it. Then how can you live your life having that in moderation? You can't. You've got to get rid of it. You have to, because otherwise it's just going to snowball again. I don't know about you, but if I had had, when I was just started my sugar-free journey, if I had biscuits in the house, I would eat the biscuits in the house. So there's no biscuits in the house.
Remove the temptation.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've had those conversations with clients before where they've said, oh, it's when the rest of the family goes to bed and then I end up sitting having a munch at night time. And I'm like, well, don't have the food in the house in the first place. Oh, but it's there for the kids. And I'm like, why are you feeding that shit to your kids? You are trying to get off that. Why are you fueling them to be in the same place that you are in 20 years' time? Like, that makes no sense. Remove it from the house. Oh, can't do that to the kids. Can't do that to the kids. And I'm just like, okay.
It's difficult, isn't it? It's very, very difficult. But you know, everyone's got to be that. I only did it when I was ready, and each of the stages that I had taken, whether it was the grains or the seed oil, the seed oils I didn't have to think twice about, but the grains, or you know, going low carb or anything like that, I did have to get myself ready to do that, because I could see the how it was affecting me. and I just didn't want that anymore. And the most recent thing, actually, I didn't even mentioned it, but most recent thing that I just can't, it's not that I've given it up, I just can't be bothered to have it, is alcohol. Because every time I do have it, if I'll have something on a, if I have something on a Friday night, then when I teach first thing on a Saturday morning, I'm incoherent and my brain doesn't work. The music's going on and we're meant to be going that way and I'm going that way and it just doesn't work, you know. So I stopped on a Friday night. Sometimes I'd have it then on a Saturday night. Not much at all, a glass, maybe two. And then I would be thrown into this awful mood the next day, feeling really low, and it would sometimes last up to 48 hours. We're not talking just, you know, a bit hungover, and you can't really get a bit hungover just by one drink, but you know, really as if I was wading through treacle, as if everything was wrong in the world, not just a bad mood, but depressive as well. And it would take a full 48 hours to come out of that. And I thought to myself, well, I can't be bothered to feel like that. I'd rather just have fun without it. So I haven't really had anything to drink for quite a while now. I've through my WhatsApp group that I mentioned earlier, I've been sharing a little bit of information about the effect of alcohol on the body. Alcohol, again, in this country is seen as another harmless treat, just like sugar is.
Or
And
in the
let's
same for some people, it's a
yeah.
light for some people.
Exactly, and that and them that sort of reliance on alcohol. I'm great. I fancy a drink. Do you fancy a drink? Really fancy a drink. Can't wait until I don't know 6 o'clock or whatever, and I'll have a drink. It's just a sugar craving. That's all it is. It's a sugar craving. You know, it's the same thing. They're one and the same. So you could give up sugar, but retain your drinking, and then. This is what I had it too, and I didn't identify it at the time. I just fancied wine more often, but it also I just thought, oh, I fancy wine because that's what I fancy now. But it's not that. It's because I was still having some here and there, and it was a sugar craving for more wine. So, a few years ago, I swapped everything that I drank to something like a, you know, cl something clear like a rum or a gin or something like that, which did help, and I tended to not get too affected by either of those. But you know, if you have a, I have a glass of wine, then I'm done for a couple of days. So I can't be bothered anymore. I just think, well, if I'm going out, I'll just have fun anyway. I don't need the drink.
Yeah, I gave up alcohol just past 9 years just past.
Brilliant.
It was one of those, for me, it was just one of those. I was down on the beach at Bora Bora in Ibiza, and I hadn't gone out the night before because I'd wanted to go up and see the sunset. And I was like, I'm just going to have a quiet night and you girls go out. And I was sitting watching the sunrise, and I went, oh, this is the feeling I've been looking for. Not the alcohol, not that chasing the fun times. And I had been a big, big partier. Like, I loved being in Ibiza and being wasted and having a quote unquote great time. But then I went out that night, I didn't have anything at all, and I had the best night that I've ever had in Ibiza
Yeah.
in all the years that I've been, when I was completely stone cold sober. And I was like, okay, I've been feeding myself a lie for a long time. A long time.
Mainly people don't like you not drinking because it makes them feel bad. And it's the same with sugar as well. They don't like you not having a dessert because it makes them feel bad. They don't want to. If you meet someone for a coffee, they don't order a, I've said to them a million times, you know, I don't care what you order. I'm not interested in what you're doing. If you want a pastry, just order a pastry. You know, if you want a cake after we our meal, then just have one. And they'll go, all right then. Well, you know, but sometimes they'll kind of go, well, actually, maybe I don't really fancy it. It's just habit. And you know, and with that little bit less alcohol as well, you get to pay the bill, and it's so much cheaper as well without any alcohol and cake on there.
It's so, yeah, so much better. You've got more money to spend on other things.
Exactly. On fitness classes.
Yes, I'm just aware of our time. So, is there anything else that you want to talk about before we finish up today?
I think I've covered the majority of it. I think the You know, I do want to stress that the amount of small ailments that have disappeared has really been a game changer and a life changer, really, because I was a very different person. And you can put that down to age, and part of that is down to bit to age as well. But I do wish that I'd done this sort of in my early 20s or when I was studying, even, because it would have been so much easier, because my ability to retain information it's better now to my brain's just not foggy anymore. There are so many health benefits. Even just having a good night's sleep, is a game changer. But I was having a good night's sleep, but it was not satisfied. I was not satisfied. I'm now satisfied with the sleep that I have. And as someone approaches and goes through the menopause as well, I know it will be a game changer for you. I'm not saying that you're not going to get menopausal symptoms, but I know for a fact that some of those symptoms will be alleviated and made so much easier. So it's never too late. I work with people of all ages, and it's never too late for anyone to make a change. And those changes can sometimes be very, very fast to come.
Amazing, thank you so much. So, if people want to follow your work, where is the best place for them to find you?
I am on a vast array of online platforms. I'm on YouTube as LHM Health and Fitness, Instagram as LHM Health Fitness. I'm on Facebook as LHM Health and Fitness, I think it is, or Health Fitness, but I'm sure as soon as you type it in, I probably won't come up to the top, but I will be there. You can see my logo down there. And I am on LinkedIn as Tina Caponi, Kaponi. I'm on Nextdoor if you're local, as LHM Health and Fitness, and probably somewhere else, but I just can't think where. Google my business. I've
All
done
of
everything. I've done it all. And honestly, if you have a small business and you link all of those things together, it starts to work. It really does.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks for
Just
having me.
thank you.